Hardly, the other said. Plakmarak vastly overrates my assistance back there.
Yes, they don't generally need much help, do they?
Card agreed. I've been very pleased with their service. Aside from running interference against hot hirelings, what brings you to Sajansij? Skywalker shrugged. The Force, actually, he said. I was trying for a vision of the future, and I saw myself here. So here I am.
Ah, Card said. Not a scheduling technique I'd be comfortable with, personally.
I'm not exactly used to it myself, Skywalker said. On the other hand, I was just thinking about trying to get in touch with you, and here you are. So it seems to have worked. What are you doing here anyway, if I may ask?
It's not a secret, Card assured him. At least not from you. I've been looking into the possibility that outside agitators might be involved in some of the protests that have been cropping up around the New Republic. Since Sajansij has a long history of peaceful demonstrations, I thought it would be an obvious target for subversion.
Makes sense, Skywalker mused. Though maybe it's too obvious.
It depends on how subtle our unknown agitators decide to be, Card said. I thought it's still worth checking out. You said you'd wanted to talk to me?
Yes, Skywalker said. I've been wondering if you've made any progress on our clone hunt.
None whatsoever, Card conceded. None of my information sources have heard even a whisper of clone activity. If they're out there, whoever's using them is keeping it very quiet.
Skywalker murmured. How about the Kavrilu pirates?
Card shook his head. They seem to have gone to ground. He cocked an eyebrow. Not that I really blame them. Being chased out of your most secure base by a Jedi Master must be a rather disconcerting experience.
You were chased off Merkur by Grand Admiral Thrawn, and you didn't panic, Skywalker reminded him. Card forced a smile. The memories of that time still provoked unpleasant twinges.
Perhaps I'm made of stronger stuff. Or perhaps I just don't panic quite so noticeably.
On his desk, the intercom twittered, and he leaned over to touch the switch.
Yes?
It was Duncan, his expression suddenly and uncharacteristically grim.
Priority message coming through for the Starry Ice. Fawn says Mara's been captured.
Card felt his stomach tighten as he dropped back into his desk chair.
Is Fawn still on?
Mostly. The signals are a little funny. Too many relays in the mix, but it's mostly clear. Com 5.
Card keyed to the channel, dimly aware that Skywalker had circled the desk and come up beside him.
This is Card. Fawn?
Yes, sir!
Fawn's voice came, wavering slightly with the distortion of multiple hyperspace relays.
We reached the Nerowon system and observed an unidentified spacecraft land on the second planet. Jade took our defender and went in. We got a pulse transmission from a recorder that indicated she was in trouble. Captured. Maybe worse.
Card could hear his heart thudding in his ears.
Duncan, do we have a copy of the recording?
Right here,
Duncan's voice said.
Play it.
He listened as it played through. The flight and landing, Mara's discovery of the cave and forest, her startled exclamation, and that final sickening thud.
Get Hasishi started on a scrub right away, Card ordered.
That thud had sounded far too much like the sound of a body hitting the ground.
I want everything you can get off that recording.
We're already on it. We did some scrubbing of our own on the way here,
Fawn said.
There's definitely breathing and a human tempo heartbeat after she goes silent. So at least at that point she was still alive. There are 50 or more flying creatures in the cave. We can sort out at least that many sets of wings flapping. Though that may not have been who she was talking to. Oh, and from the different speeds of the sound through air and bone, It looks like that thud was something hitting the front or side of her head.
Card grimaced. An attack.
Or an accident. We know she was moving just before it happened, and that she was inside a cave. She could have run into a wall or something.
We could try an echo analysis,
Denken suggested.
Try to figure out how close she was to the wall when she was hit.
Yes. Card looked up at Skywalker, standing in dark silence beside him, troubled eyes seemingly focused on empty space. You know anything about this? He asked the Jedi. Either the planet or whoever she was talking to? Skywalker shook his head slowly, his eyes looking even more troubled. No, but I did see a vision of Mara the same time I saw myself here. And where she was, it might have been a cave.
I hated to leave her there,
Fart said.
But I also didn't want to risk all of us disappearing without letting someone know what had happened. Especially given those ships and that fortress.
No, you did the right thing, Card assured her. The question now is how we get her out.
He looked up at Skywalker.
Or rather, who we send to do the job.
Skywalker must have heard the challenge in his voice. His eyes came back from whatever they were staring at to look down at Card.
You're suggesting I go?
Someone there seems to know you, Card pointed out. At least Mara thought so. You may be the only one he, or it, or they, will be willing to talk to.
I can't leave, Skywalker said,
the words coming out almost mechanically, his attention clearly elsewhere.
I have duties here.
You have a duty to Mara, too, Card countered. For that matter, you have a duty to the rest of the New Republic. You saw one of those ships. You know we're dealing with an unknown culture here. If that fortress she saw is made of the same material as the one in Hijarna, they'll be able to sit in there and shrug off any attack we could throw at them. And...
All right, Skywalker said. I'll go.
Card blinked, taken slightly aback by the suddenness of the decision. He'd expected to have to argue at least a few more minutes, and probably throw in something concrete before the other agreed. But he also knew better than to question a decision he was already pushing for.
Good, he said. Tell me what you need in the way of equipment or supplies, and we'll get it for you.
You'll want a bigger ship, of course. Denken, what do we have available?
No time for that, Skywalker said before Denken could answer. My X-Wing's over in docking Rectangle 16. If you can download a copy of the nav data to R2, we'll get it refueled and be on our way.
You can't carry a passenger in an X-Wing,
Fawn objected.
If she's hurt...
Then we take her ship and leave the X-Wing behind,
Skywalker cut her off.
We're wasting time.
You won't get very far in a Defender,
Card reminded him. King is bored on a hunch.
Yes... The timing and distances would work. Let me suggest a compromise. You leave here in your X-Wing, and I'll have the Dawn Beat bring the Jade's Fire to meet you off Daroon. Her droid won't be activated, but you and your R2 should be able to fly it without any trouble.
Skywalker shook his head.
I don't want to try to sneak onto Nerewon with a ship that big.
Then leave the Fire hidden somewhere in the outer system and ride your starfighter in,
Fawn suggested.
The docking port should handle an X-Wing without any problems.
Skywalker hesitated a heartbeat, then nodded.
All right. Good,
Card said.
Denken, get onto spaceport control and have a fuel order cut for his X-Wing. Number one on the priority list. And you can bribe or threaten whoever you have to get it there.
Then put together the most comprehensive survival kit you can that will fit an X-Wing's cargo hold. 2 cubic meters and 110 kilograms, as I recall.
Got it,
Denken said.
What kind of backup are we going to send in behind him?
As much as we can throw together,
Card told him, keen for a list of available resources. His organization's fleet was impressively large, but scattered around the entire New Republic the way it was. It would take precious time to collect any kind of attack force together.
I don't want any backup.
Skywalker cut into his musings.
Bringing in the Jade's fire is risky enough. The more ships in the system, the better the chances one of them will be spotted. It'll be better for me to try to slip in by myself.
But you can't get her out alone,
Farn said.
I can, Skywalker said softly. I have to.
You can't,
Farn insisted.
Card, tell him.
For a long moment, Card studied the younger man, his mind flicking back to that first meeting between the two of them aboard the Wild Card so long ago. Even back then, Skywalker had never been what he would have called brash. But looking at him now, Card was struck by the quiet maturity 10 years had added to his face.
It's his call, Fawn, he said. If he says he can do it, then he can.
Skywalker nodded.
Thank you, he said.
I think the thanks are all on the other side, Card pointed out, trying to force a smile. All right, fuel and supplies, and the Jade's fire at Doruun. What else do you need us to do?
Just what you're already doing,
Skywalker said.
Keep looking into these riots, and if you find anything, get the information to Leia.
Done.
Card said.
Anything else?
Yes,
Skywalker said, a shadow crossing his face.
Could you get word to Leia on Coruscant and tell her where I've gone?
I'll go myself,
Card promised, getting to his feet again.
We'll leave as soon as you're gone.
Thank you,
Skywalker said. He turned and headed for the office door.
You said you saw Mara in a vision,
Card called after him.
What was she doing?
Skywalker paused in the doorway.
She was in a rocky place, floating in water, he said, not turning around. And she looked dead.
Card nodded slowly.
I see.
He was still standing there, gazing at the open door, long after Skywalker had gone.
Chapter 18.
Quite unfairly, the battle alarm sounded right in the middle of dessert. For a split second, Wedge considered shoveling the last 3 bites of his Citro snow cake into his mouth at once. Decided running to the landing bays with a full mouth lacked the proper dignity, and regretfully left the cake orphaned on the messroom table.
Starfighter wings, check in.
The Peregrine's fighter coordinator was calling as Wedge slid on his flight helmet and dropped into the cockpit of his X-Wing.
Rogue Squadron, where are you?
Right here, Paris, Wedge said, glancing around to confirm that the rest of the squadron were indeed present in the bay. What's going on?
Don't know for sure. All I know is that we just got a panic call from the Sifkrik system. General Bell Iblis talked to them for maybe 5 minutes, and suddenly we're getting ready to fly. Okay, you show green. Launch when ready.
Copy. Okay, Rogues, let's go.
20 seconds later, they were in space, driving forward along the Peregrine's flank toward Vanguard position.
I don't suppose this might be a drill,
Rogue Six suggested on their private frequency.
Well, if it is, the General owes me another dessert,
Rogue 12 put in.
Anyone been following local politics in this sector?
I have a little,
Rogue Nine said grimly.
My father-in-law's got some interest here. 10-1, it's the Freshliks. They've been feuding with the Sifkris ever since we chased the Empire out of the area.
Maybe they finally decided to finish it,
Rogue Two suggested.
With General Bell Iblis and a New Republic task force right next door?
Rogue Six put in incredulously.
What are they using for brains, Groot cheese?
All ships, this is General Bell Iblis.
The General's voice came on the command frequency, cutting off the conversation.
We've just been informed that a strong Freshliks force is moving in on the Sifkree homeworld of Sifkrik. As that system is only a few minutes away, we've been asked to go take a look.
Terrific,
Wedge thought sourly, as he glanced back over the New Republic task force.
one Katana Fleet dreadnought, two Nebulon B escort frigates, and three starfighter squadrons. And they were supposed to take on a force big enough to attack a whole planet? Bel Iblis might have been reading his mind.
Obviously, we're not planning to go head-to-head with them. In fact, we're going to have to be very careful we don't overstep our legal bounds here. That's all I can say until we get there and assist the situation. Commander Paris?
All ships, check in!
Paris ordered.
Prepare to jump to light speed on my mark.
What does he mean, legal bounds?
Rogue Six asked as the fleet began its check-in.
My guess is that whoever called Bel Iblis wasn't someone who could officially ask for New Republic assistance, Wedge told him. Some minor bureaucrat, maybe just a rattled space traffic controller. If we don't have an official request...
Rogue Squadron, go!
Paris ordered.
Copy, Wedge said.
He pulled back on the hyperdrive lever, squinted as the star lines flared. They were off. It was a 12-minute flight to the Sifkrik system. Alone in the solitude of hyperspace, he spent those minutes running a final check on the X-Wing's systems and armaments, and wondering how the legendary General Garm Bel Iblis was going to pull this one off. The timer clicked down toward zero. Settling himself, Wedge pushed the lever back. The star lines flared again.
He blinked. What in space?
On the Rogue's private channel, somebody snorted.
You must be joking,
Rogue Two said.
That is an invasion fleet?
Wedge looked at his tactical readout, shaking his head in silent agreement. 2 40-year-old Kruk battle wagons, with 5 Lancer-class frigates, probably half that age, and maybe 30 modern Jompers Customs pursuit ships.
So much for the big bad threat,
Rogate commented contemptuously.
We could probably chase them out of here all by ourselves.
I don't know,
Rogue 11 said.
Someone seems plenty worried about them. Take a look at the far planetary rim. Must be 20 freighters scurrying for cover.
And another 100 who aren't going to make it,
Rogue 7 pointed out.
There, to port side. The Freslik's force has got them cut off.
I get it,
Rogue 9 said.
Those clever little scumroths. That must be the annual Palmwom plant shipment. Freslik's attack force. This is General Bel Iblis of the New Republic,
Bel Iblis's voice announced.
Please state your intentions.
I am Plox,
a thickly accented voice shot back.
I speak for the Freslik's. Our intentions do not concern the New Republic. This is a private matter between ourselves and the Sifkris.
I'm afraid I cannot accept that,
Bel Iblis said.
Any aggression against a New Republic member is our concern.
This is not aggression, General Bel Iblis,
the Fresh countered.
We are a delegation come to discuss the Sifkri vote on the Drashteen initiative.
There was a pause. Bel Iblis no doubt having someone look up what exactly the Drashteen initiative was.
Corrin, what are these Palmwom plants you mentioned?
Wedge asked.
They're a type of hotworld shrub that grows on the system's inner planet,
Rogue Nine said.
You can get about 8 different exotic medicines and twice that number of food flavorings out of them. Problem is, they have to be processed within 30 hours of picking, or they're useless.
So that's what the Freslik's are doing,
Rogue Seven growled.
They don't have to invade anyone or set up a long-term blockade ring. All they have to do is keep those freighters back for a few hours, and the Sifkris are out a bunch of money.
Try about 20% of their annual gross product,
Rogue Nine put in.
We're talking serious economic warfare here. No wonder they sounded panicked when they called.
The main channel crackled to life again.
Speaker Plarks, this is General Bel Iblis. I've reviewed the Drashteen initiative, and I see no justification for this kind of confrontation.
Then you did not review it closely,
the Fresh snarled.
The Sivkri government cast a deciding vote that prevented our sector senator from adding his voice to the crowd in condemnation of the Bothan government and people.
The vote was legally taken.
The vote was wrong!
Plark snapped.
To allow the Bothans to escape proper punishment will merely encourage further atrocities like Hamas in the future. The Sifkri government must be made aware of that and given the opportunity to change its vote.
A convenient enough excuse,
Rogue Two muttered.
He's got a point, though,
Rogue Five said.
Heavily wrapped in local politics and blackmail, but a point.
I understand your feelings on this matter,
Beliblis said.
But at the same time, we cannot stand by and allow you to interfere with interstellar commerce this way.
Anthrol,
the Fresh said.
I encourage you to review New Republic regulations on such matters, General Beliblis.
There was another pause.
He's right,
Rogue 12 said grimly.
This is intrasystem, not interstellar. We can't move in unless and until we get an official invitation to do so.
Which means it's all in the government's shockball court now,
Rogue 5 muttered.
What do you think, Corrin? Can they move fast enough to save the plants?
I don't know,
Rogue 9 said.
But I'd be willing to lay odds that the Freshliks picked a time to pull this stunt when some key Sifkri official is off-planet or otherwise out of touch.
There was a click on the private channel.
Rogue Squadron, this is Beliblis. Commander Horn?
Yes, sir,
Rogue Nine said.
I was given to understand that Booster Tarek has some interest in this sector. Is that true?
There was just the briefest of pauses.
Yes, General, he does.
Would those interests occasionally include legitimate shipping? Say when the need and fees are high enough? Such as during the annual palm wam shipment?
There was a longer pause this time.
I really don't know, sir,
Rogue Nine said, sounding puzzled.
I think it's reasonable that they would,
Beliblis continued.
Given that assumption, do you suppose one of those stalled freighters out there might belong to him?
And suddenly, Wedge understood. The legendary General Beliblis was going to pull this one off, all right. Maybe.
Do we have IDs on the ships, General?
He asked.
I'm sending the data across now,
Beliblis said.
Commander Horn, take a look, please.
Understood, sir,
Rogue Nine said, his voice no longer puzzled. So he'd caught on, too.
Yes. That freighter listed as the Sycophant Jolly, over at the far side of the pack? I believe that could actually be the Hoopster's prank, one of Booster's ships.
I see,
Beliblis said, his voice suddenly heavy with official weight.
I recognize your familial relationship with Captain Tarek, Commander, and I realize that this is going to be personally painful for you, but you're an officer of the New Republic Fleet. And we cannot and will not bend the rules against smuggling for anyone.
We understand, sir, Wedge said, pitching his tone to the same seriousness level. Request permission to check out this suspect ship.
Permission granted, Rogue Squadron,
Beliblis said.
Be careful not to accidentally engage the Freshlik's forces.
Understood, sir, Wedge said. Rogue Squadron, form up around me.
Kicking power to the drive, he swung the X-Wing away from the Peregrine.
Looks like the most direct route to the Sycophant Jolly is right through the middle of the Freshlik's blockade force,
Rogue 8 commented.
And we certainly don't want to give them time to dump any contraband while we fly around,
Rogue 9 agreed.
I guess we'll have to go through the blockade then,
Rogue 2 concluded.
Just everyone be careful not to accidentally engage.
Very careful, Wedge said. Let's do it.
They were halfway to the Freshlik's forces before the alien commander suddenly seemed to notice what was happening.
General Beliblis, what are your starfighters doing? You have no legal justification for an attack on my ships.
Your ships are not under attack, Speaker Plarks,
Bell Iblis assured him.
We've identified one of the freighters waiting beyond your delegation as a smuggler flying under a false ID. By New Republic law, we have both the right and the duty to board any such ship and impound its cargo.
It was forever afterward unclear to Wedge just what exactly the Freshlick's commander thought was going to happen next. Whether he thought Bell Iblis was planning to transfer the perishable cargo from all 100-odd freighters to the Peregrine, or just declare all the freighters suspect and insist they be escorted down to the planet for a proper search. But whichever it was, he leaped to the wrong conclusion and the bait with both hands.
No!
Plark shouted.
They are not to approach! Do you hear? They will not approach!
You can't stop us, Wedge put in. Move out of the way. We're coming through.
No!
The Frey shouted. There was a jabber of hissing, guttural language, and then the comm abruptly shut off. Wedge took a deep breath, preparing himself. And suddenly, the Freshlick's battle wagons opened fire.
Evasive!
Wedge snapped, twisting his X-Wing hard to starboard as the laser blasts blazed past, one of the shots nearly taking off his upper port side engines. There was another snarl of hissing gutturals, and another salvo of laser fire shot by.
Rogues, reform! He called. Return to fleet!
Turning his nose farther around, ducking under one final blast of enemy laser fire, he headed back toward the Peregrine. But the dreadnought was no longer there. It and the rest of the New Republic fleet, reconfiguring into the General's favorite combat formation, were moving decisively toward the Freshlick's blockade force. Something that sounded like a wheezing squawk came over the comm.
New Republic force!
The Freshlick's commander snarled.
What are you doing? You have no right to move against me.
On the contrary, Speaker Plarks,
Bell Iblis said, his voice suddenly blade sharp.
I have every right. You have just opened fire on New Republic spacecraft. Surrender immediately or prepare to be destroyed.
I protest!
Plarks gasped.
Your ships provoked us into defending ourselves.
Last chance, Speaker,
Bell Iblis said.
Surrender or face the consequences.
There was a snarl of gutturals, and as the rogues reached the Peregrine and curved around again into their positions in the battle formation, Wedge saw that the Freshlick's ships had abandoned their blockade and were turning their guns to face the oncoming New Republic force. Fleetingly, Wedge wondered if Bell Iblis would be gracious enough to simply hold position in the standoff now that he'd broken the blockade, or if he'd insist on making the Freshlick's pay for their aggression. Plarks took the decision on himself. In an awesome blaze of laser fire, the two Kruk battle wagons opened fire as the jumpers' pursuit ships leaped forward to meet the incoming X-Wings.
New Republic forces?
Bell Iblis said coldly.
Engage at will.
The Freshlick's government has delivered a sharp protest to me over your actions a few hours ago.
Admiral Akbar's gruff voice came over the Peregrine's comm speaker.
They claim you launched an unprovoked attack on a peaceful delegation.
Standing a respectful distance from the general's chair, Wedge caught Corrin Horn's attention and rolled his eyes in a silent gesture of disgust. The other grimaced in agreement.
On the contrary, Bell Iblis told Akbar. They were engaged in a clear violation of free economic movement, besides which they attacked first.
That's not the way the Freshlick's tell it,
Akbar rumbled.
They say you clearly overstepped New Republic authority.
I'm sure they do, Bell Iblis said. Do you wish me to stand for an inquiry?
Don't be absurd, General,
Akbar said.
and for the first time since the conversation had started, the Mon Cal's voice seemed to Wedge to have relaxed a little.
We need all the good commanders we can get. And I don't doubt the Freshlicks deserve whatever you delivered to them. You said there was a smuggling ship in among the other freighters?
Bell Iblis glanced up at Corrin, who nodded.
Yes, sir. Without question,
the general confirmed.
One of Booster Terek's. The Sifkree authorities have impounded the ship and are checking for contraband.
I can imagine the conversation that will take place on the Air Adventure sometime in the near future,
Akbar said, his voice going a little odd. Mon Cal's had a long hatred for smuggling and smugglers, and the Admiral was undoubtedly finding a certain poetic humor in what had happened.
Though the justification of your position will be told if there was indeed no contraband aboard.
Regulations don't care whether the search comes up dry or not, Bell Iblis reminded him. Or are you suggesting that President Gavrisim might not choose to see it that way?
The President is bound by certain diplomatic and political necessities. However, I'm certain that he will read your report on this incident before rendering any judgment. Still, I suggest you cut your patrol circuit short and return to...
Abruptly, the signal squealed and vanished.
Comm station, what's going on?
Bell Iblis demanded.
The problem's not at our end, General,
a new voice reported.
Looks like the holonet carrier's been cut off.
Bell Iblis threw a look at Wedge and Corrin.
Trouble on Coruscant?
He asked the comm officer.
Well, I don't know, sir. I'm checking the other relays. No, sir, it's not Coruscant. Looks like the relay at Meng Genie has gone down.
Sir, we're picking up a general alert on the secondary net,
a new voice put in.
The relay at Meng Genie has allegedly come under attack from a small group of, quote, dissident elements, unquote.
Acknowledged, Bell Iblis said. Navigation, plot us a fast course for Meng Genie. Calm, relay the alert to all New Republic forces and bases in the area. Tell them we're going in and request backup reinforcements.
He got acknowledgements and turned again to Wedge and Corrin.
It looks as if your reports will have to wait, he said. Get back to your squadron and get ready to fly.
Not good,
Corrin puffed, as he and Wedge jogged down the Peregrine's ventral corridor toward their docking bays.
When they start messing with long-range communications, you know they're getting serious.
We don't have any proof it's this Vengeance group,
Wedge pointed out, dodging around a Dresselian crouched over an open access panel.
Maybe not, the other countered. But I never mentioned Vengeance. You thought of them on your own.
Wedge grimaced.
Yeah,
he agreed.
I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did, Corrin said.
And you're also thinking that between killing riots, overt interplanetary attacks, and now long-range comm kicking, this has gone way beyond a few zealots protesting Bothan involvement in Kaar Mas.
Yeah,
Wedge agreed soberly.
I can hardly wait to see what happens next.
Chapter 19.
Read and cry,
Lando said, laying his Sabacc cards down on the table.
23. A pure Sabacc run.
Interesting,
Senator Myotomia murmured, his leathery diamolin face unreadable as he studied his own cards.
I presume the reference to crying is not a literal part of the game as you play it. A pure Sabacc run, you say?
Yes,
Lando confirmed, an uncomfortable sensation tickling at the back of his neck. The senator had made this same dramatic pause on the Sabacc pot hand in exactly 5 out of 8 complete games they'd played since the Lady Luck's hurried scramble off Silpar. 5 games that the senator also happened to win.
Unfortunate,
Myotomia said. laying his cards almost daintily on the table.
I have an idiot's array. I believe that wins?
Yes, it wins, Lando said, shaking his head in disgust. Make that 6 out of 9. I can't believe you haven't played this game professionally, he grumbled, starting to gather up the cards.
The Diamol flicked his fingers in the air.
You don't truly believe the Diamala have created our vast financial and business empire from mere common sense and hard work, do you?
Lando paused, half the cards still on the table, eyeing the senator suspiciously. Was he actually implying? No, of course not. Ridiculous.
That was a joke, right?
Of course,
Myotomia said, flicking his fingers again.
Common sense and hard work are all any being or species require to succeed. Luck is merely an illusion, trusted by the ignorant and chased by the foolish.
With an effort, Lando fought down a flicker of annoyance. His professional gambling days were long in the distant past, but the Diamol's obvious contempt still rankled a little.
So in other words, if you're smart enough, nothing ever happens you can't anticipate.
Of course, the unanticipated may happen,
Myotomia said.
But those who are prepared can always find their way through.
All by themselves? Lando persisted. They never need any help.
They may,
the Diamol said, unruffled.
But anticipating the need for assistance is merely one more part of common sense.
Ah, Lando said, nodding. So in other words, the fact that I recognize my need for extra security for my ore shipments means that I have good common sense.
It may,
Myotomia agreed.
It could also mean...
And suddenly, with a loud crack of released energy coming from the direction of the Lady Luck's hyperdrive, the mottled sky above them abruptly flowed into star lines. Lando was at the top of the circular staircase by the time the star lines finished shrinking back into stars.
What is it?
Myotomia demanded from behind him.
Hyperdrive failure!
Lando shouted over his shoulder as he all but threw himself down the stairs. If one of the couplings had failed, he needed to get the power rerouted before it started into surge instability and took out everything else on the circuit. With visions of a major repair job out here in the middle of nowhere looming before him, a repair job that would not exactly endear him to his Diamolan guest, he sprinted across the dining area, past the cabins, and skidded to a halt in front of the engineering control panel, and frowned. There were none of the glowing red lights that would have indicated major systems failures, or even the blinking red status lines pointing to minor systems failure. In fact, according to the displays, the hyperspace dropout was simply the normal automatic response of close planetary approach. There was a duly logged note that course comparison with the nav computer indicated that no planet should be in range at the moment.
Oh no,
Lando breathed, leaping up the short stairway and jabbing at the bridge door release. The door slid open, and he stepped through. And there it was, floating silently in the darkness directly in front of him. The all-too-familiar shape of an Imperial Star Destroyer. Fighting back a curse, he dived for the helm, slapping the row of emergency power boost switches on his way. He dropped into the chair, threw full power to the drive, and twisted the yacht's nose hard to starboard. Or rather, tried to twist it. Even with full emergency power, the Lady Luck wasn't moving. Or rather, she wasn't moving where Lando wanted her to go.
We are in a tractor beam,
the senator's cool voice said from behind him.
Unnoticed,
Lando said shortly, shifting into a sharp up-down wiggling motion. If the tractor beam operator thought his target was trying to go vertical, he might overcorrect and allow the yacht to slip the lock. But no such luck.
Strap down,
Lando ordered Myotomia, letting the tractor damp out the yacht's residual wiggling and taking a quick look around. The Imperials had to have an interdictor cruiser around here somewhere. Yes, there it was. Off in the distance to port side. Its nose pointed in the Lady Luck's direction. But not all that precisely pointed. In fact, the projected cone of hyperdrive dampening gravity waves was not even close to being centered on the tug and back contest taking place out here. If Lando could break free of the tractor beam, there was an even chance that he could get to the edge of the cone and escape before the Star Destroyer could reestablish the lock. If...
Call your aide on the intercom and have him strapped down, he told the senator.
The Lady Luck had one last trick up her sleeve. A little something that one of Luke's exploits a few years back had inspired Lando to install. Powering up the backup proton torpedo launcher, he keyed for a Stage 3 torpedo and fired. The torpedo flashed out from under the yacht's bow, accelerating suddenly as the tractor beam yanked at it. There was a flicker from Lando's board as one of the Star Destroyer's turbolaser batteries began to track it. And then, no more than 20 meters in front of the Lady Luck, the torpedo exploded. Not into a devastating blast, but into a brilliant cloud of track-reflective particles. Particles that should, in theory, confuse the lock, tie up the entire tractor beam, and let him slip free. And it was working. The yacht shuddered for a moment, and then jerked hard, as the invisible grip was abruptly broken.
Hang on!
Lando shouted, turning the ship's nose hard over. If Luke's experience with the covert shroud gambit was anything to go by, he would have bare seconds to get to the edge of the Interdictor Cruiser's mass shadow cone before the Imperials woke up and started shooting. But even as the Lady Luck started to turn, there was a burst of light from behind the particle cloud between him and the Star Destroyer. He had just enough time to see the glittering track-reflective particles turn a dull, non-reflective black. And with another jolt, the yacht was once again trapped in the tractor beam.
What now?
Myotomia asked.
Only one thing we can do,
Lando told him, his stomach tight as he shut down the Lady Luck's sublight engines.
We surrender.
Six stormtroopers led the way, clumping along in perfect unison in three ranks of two each. Behind them, their softer footsteps not even trying to stay in step, strode Myotomia and his aide. Lando walked behind the two Diamala, obscurely glad to be in the less noticeable position in the back. Not that that spot really gained him anything. There were six more stormtroopers behind him, bringing up the rear. Apart from a brief come with us from the stormtrooper commander, there had been no communication between captors and prisoners. But Lando had been aboard more than one Star Destroyer in his time, and he didn't need either an invitation or a map to know that they were being herded into senior officer country. Possibly to the intelligence officer's nerve center. Possibly even to the captain's office complex itself. He'd been unable to read the ship's ID before the Lady Luck had been drawn into the gaping hangar bay, and had been hoping against hope that this was some monstrous practical joke being played on him with one of the New Republic's captured Star Destroyers. With each passing step, with each Imperial officer or crewer who stepped respectfully aside to give the stormtroopers room, the hope faded a little further. It seemed to take forever. But finally, they came to a halt at a door marked simply Secondary Command Room.
You are expected, the commander said from behind Lando, as the leading stormtroopers formed a guard semicircle around the door. Enter.
Thank you,
Myotomia said, his voice impossibly calm. The door slid open, and without hesitation, the two Diamala strode inside. Reluctantly, Lando followed, and nearly ran into Myotomia's back, as both aliens suddenly jerked to a halt. Lando caught his balance, peering between them to try to see what had startled them so much. The room was sparsely decorated, with little more than some tactical wall monitors and a double ring of repeater displays encircling a command chair in the middle of the room. Standing beside the chair was a hard-faced man wearing Major's insignia. Rising calmly from the chair itself, Lando felt his heart seize up in his chest.
No.
No,
It couldn't be, but it was.
Good day, gentlemen, Grand Admiral Thrawn said, gesturing to them. My apologies as to the rather informal method by which you were brought here. Please, come inside.
The horrified moment seemed to stretch itself toward eternity as Lando gazed in stunned horror at that face. It couldn't be. Grand Admiral Thrawn was dead. He was dead. He had to be. And yet, here he was, very much alive. No one had yet moved.
Please, come inside, the Grand Admiral repeated, this time with an edge of command in his voice.
Myotomia stirred and continued forward, his movement seemingly breaking his aide's own paralysis. Numbly, Lando followed, sensing as he did so their stormtrooper rear guard filing in behind them.
That's far enough, the Major said harshly, as Myotomia came within 3 meters of the outer display ring.
They've been disarmed.
None of them were carrying any weapons, the stormtrooper commander reported.
3 of them, Lando noted, had moved up to form a flanking column along their right. A glance over his shoulder confirmed that the commander and the other 2 had spread out along the wall behind them. A simple yet effective positioning that provided close guard while at the same time keeping the stormtroopers out of each other's crossfire.
Yes, they are keeping a close eye on you, Captain Calrissian, Thrawn confirmed. After that unpleasantness at Bilbringi, I've agreed to extra precautions. Not that I'm expecting trouble from any of you, of course.
Of course, Lando said, turning back to look at him.
It was a trick, of course. It had to be. Thrawn was dead. The Imperial Command itself had said so. And yet...
You look remarkably well, Admiral,
Myotomia said.
I must confess to my surprise at seeing you here.
Thrawn smiled faintly.
My reappearance has surprised many others, Senator Myotomia, and will surprise a great many more in the days to come. However, I didn't ask you aboard merely to toast my continued health. The actual reason... How did you survive the Bilbringi shipyards?
Lando blurted.
The Imperial report said you were dead.
You will not interrupt the Grand Admiral,
the Major snapped, taking a step toward him.
Peace, Major, Thrawn said quietly, halting the other's advance with an almost languid gesture. Under the circumstances, a certain degree of shock is entirely forgivable.
Yet you do not answer his question,
Myotomia said. It seemed to Lando that a faint flicker of distant pain touched the Grand Admiral's face for a moment.
My survival was due to a unique combination of several factors, he said. You'll forgive me if I withhold the details.
But your own Imperial reports, Lando repeated.
The Imperial report said what I allowed them to say,
Thrawn said, his eyes starting to flash with annoyance.
It was necessary while I recovered that I...
He broke off.
Perhaps I have misjudged you, Captain, he said, his voice calm again. And you, Senator, I assume that when you encountered a being returned from the dead, you'd be more interested in what he had to say than the details of the journey. My mistake.
His eyes flicked over Lando's shoulder.
Commander, you may escort them back to their ship. Major, have intelligence confirm the current location of Ishori Senator Duxono.
Our apologies, Grand Admiral,
Myotomia said quickly as the stormtroopers started forward.
As you said, we were momentarily shocked, but we listen now.
Thrawn lifted a hand, and the advancing stormtroopers stopped.
Very well, he said. My message is quite simple, Senator. You've recently become aware that a group of Bothans were involved in the attempted genocide on Kaar Mas. I've come to offer my aid in bringing those guilty to justice.
why Atamia inclined his head to the side, as if listening to a faint and distant sound.
"Excuse me?"
"No, you heard correctly," Thrawn assured him,
that faint smile once again touching his lips.
"I want to help."
Myotomia twisted his head around to throw a glance back at Lando, turned back again.
"How?"
"By identifying the guilty parties, of course," the Grand Admiral said. "If President Gavrasim truly wishes this crisis resolved, he need only ask for my assistance. A visit to Bothui, a few minutes' conversation with each of the Bothan clan leaders, and I'll know the truth."
Myotomia inclined his head to the side again.
"The Bothan leaders claim they do not know which of their people were involved in the crime."
"Oh, come now, Senator," Thrawn said, his tone dark and cold. "Do you really expect they would say anything else?"
Myotomia seemed to digest that.
"And you believe you could learn the truth merely by speaking with them?"
The glowing red eyes glittered.
"Yes."
There was a brief silence.
"Would it not be simpler for you to merely locate the proper Imperial records and give them to us?"
"Of course it would," Thrawn said. "And such a search is already underway. But the Imperial Records Library on Bastion is quite extensive, and the process could take weeks or even months to complete."
He cocked a blue-black eyebrow.
"I don't believe you have that much time to spare."
"You seem convinced that the New Republic is facing a serious crisis,"
Myotomia said.
"We have weathered other such crises in the past."
"Your confidence is admirable,"
Thrawn said, leaning back slightly in his seat.
"But I'd advise you that you relay my offer to the rebellion leadership before rashly and unilaterally rejecting it."
"I never stated that I rejected your offer, Grand Admiral,"
Myotomia said.
Thrawn smiled. "No, of course you didn't," he said,
his tone far more knowing than Lando found comfortable.
"I would like nothing more than to continue this discussion, Senator. It's been a long time since I've had the pleasure of debating a trained Diamolan mind. But I have other matters to attend to, and you have a message to deliver. Commander, escort them back to their ship. Goodbye, Senator. Captain."
"A question, Admiral, if I may,"
Lando said quickly as the stormtroopers came up behind him. His mind was finally starting to unfreeze. And if this was a trick, this might be the only chance they'd have to unmask it.
"I saw you once from a distance while you were in the company of the smuggler Talon Card. Can you tell me where that was and why you were there?"
Thrawn's face hardened.
"If this is a test, Captain, you've chosen your topic unwisely. I've spent a great deal of time during my recovery considering the proper payment to be exacted from Talon Card for his many betrayals. I do not like to be reminded of him except to consider how short his remaining life is going to be. That message you may deliver."
"I see,"
Lando murmured, closing his mouth firmly. His reckless and odds-playing youth was far behind him, and the expression on Thrawn's face was definitely the kind that discouraged further questions. Once again, though, Myotomia was not so easily put off.
"Yet you do not answer his question,"
he pointed out. The glowing red eyes shifted to the Diamol, and for a single awful moment, Lando thought, the Admiral was going to have the three of them gunned down right there and then. But to his relief, Thrawn merely smiled.
"The Diamol in mind," he said,
his voice utterly calm again.
"My apologies, Senator."
He looked back at Lando.
"You're referring to my meeting with Card at his base on the planet Merkur, when I was searching for Luke Skywalker. You and someone else General Solo, I assume, watched our landing from within the forest.
Lando felt a cold chill run up his back.
You knew we were there?
I knew someone was there, Thrawn said. As I'm sure you know, select stormtroopers have extra sensor equipment built into their helmets. One of them caught a reflective glint from the macro binoculars you were using.
Yet you did nothing?
My Atomia asked.
Thrawn shrugged slightly.
At the time, I assumed it was merely some of Card's people, set there to make sure my stormtroopers didn't become, shall we say, overzealous. Given the density of foliage, even a heavy blaster would have been harmless against us from that position. So I ordered that the observers be left alone.
His mouth hardened just a bit.
Subsequent events, of course, showed the situation to have been otherwise. Does that satisfy your curiosity, Captain?
Lando managed a nod.
Yes, Admiral, it does.
Good,
Thrawn said coolly. Thank you for your time, gentlemen. And again, my apologies for the unscheduled stop. Commander, see them to their ship.
30 minutes later, seated at the Lady Luck's helm, Lando watched as the Interdictor Cruiser and Star Destroyer made their synchronized jump to light speed.
As you said, Senator, he murmured, sometimes the unanticipated will happen. I'm glad that those who are prepared will always find their way through.
My Atomia said nothing. Perhaps for once, he had nothing to say. Grimacing, Lando keyed the board and swung the Lady Luck's nose back on course for Coruscant. President Gaverson wasn't going to like this. Not one bit. Neither would anyone else. There hadn't been any communications planned for this point in the plan. And yet there was Major Tierce's quarter-sized holographic image flickering slightly above Moff Deesra's private hologram pod.
The transmission's been secured, Deesra said,
a cold blade edge of dread grinding into his stomach as he watched the encryption display. If something had gone wrong...
What is it?
No problems, if that's what you're wondering,
Tierce said.
The whole operation went tech-stock smooth.
I'm delighted to hear it, Deesra growled. So why are you risking an open communication this way?
I knew you'd be worried. I wanted to help set your mind at ease.
Deesra smiled sardonically, knowing the expression was probably wasted with a hollow this size.
Thank you so much, Major. I do so appreciate your concern. So our puppet performed adequately?
I'd even go further and say he performed superbly. He had them in the palm of his hand from the moment they came in to the moment they left.
No surprises, then?
Not really. Calrissian tried to trap him with a question about the time Thrawn visited Talon Card on Merkur. Fortunately for us, he'd actually read the detailed report I'd written up on my time with Thrawn and knew the answer.
Fortunately for him, you mean?
Deesra said, putting an edge of threat into his voice.
How soon will you be back?
That's the other reason I called, now that we're here. I think we're going to stay in Rebellion-occupied space for a while.
Deesra frowned, the cold blade edge starting its grinding again.
What for?
I'd like to nose around a bit,
the other said, with a casual wave of his hand.
Send activation signals to some of the sleeper groups we haven't contacted yet. There are still a few we weren't able to send transmissions to because of distance or positioning. Mostly, I want to see what Coruscant's reaction will be to Thrawn's reappearance.
Probably to send 50 Star Cruisers charging in at you. This is crazy, Tierce. It's also not part of the plan.
Military plans are always subject to change, Your Excellency.
This is not what I had in mind for Flim. You know that.
And you know that when I joined, I said we could do better than what you had in mind.
Deesra ground his teeth savagely. You're going to ruin everything and get yourselves killed in the bargain.
On the contrary,
Tyr said, and even on the quarter side,